Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk about second chances this morning. Brian Freeman and Troy Skibo are going to tell a great story. We were just saying that the three of us have talked about this show for a couple of years. I forgot about it, and then just the other day, you both approached me. So it's great to have you here, and we're going to get into depth and detail about what you're in to talk about. But good to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
You two have known each other for a while. I guess we'll just start from the beginning. And I'll kind of let you guys talk it through, and we'll just kind of take it from there, because it really is, Brian, this is, you first told me this story, and I got goosebumps through the whole story, and then Troy filled in some more things, and you two have a very unique relationship, and a long relationship.
Yeah, it's been great to reconnect. It's funny, because the timelines and everything happening, was almost 20 years to date. Troy and I were talking the other day. Back in June of 2006, my life turned left and Troy had to arrest me. And in June of 2026, we are going into a program talking about second chances and
yeah.
You know, been having a lot of conversations, but I think I'm jumping ahead. So
no, yeah, we'll get into all that. That's perfect, and we'll start the story in a second. But just on a side note, Troy, I can't believe how difficult it must be for you to arrest Brian, and just because he was in law enforcement, and you were in law enforcement.
Yeah, it's definitely something not in the playbook. You know, when you're coming up in your career. You know, things do happen. There's bad apples everywhere. But just because you have bad apples doesn't mean that you can rebound from that and make a positive change.
Yeah.
And so, like Brian said, we go back in the mid to late 90s where we started our law enforcement career. Mm-hmm. And, we kind of crossed paths a couple of different times.
Mm-hmm.
In law enforcement, and of course, when Brian took that left-hand turn, it's a godsend that that the good Lord has had our paths cross again.
And, yeah.
I often say, and I might say this a few times today, that coincidence is often God's signature.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll hear me say that again, but we're just blessed to be able to tell our story and hopefully make an impact and a change on someone.
So I'll start with you, Brian, because this centers around you. You got into law enforcement. Was that something growing up that you'd always wanted to do?
Yeah, I really wasn't a big fan of high school. I didn't really like school. I did okay, but I really didn't apply myself. But when I got involved with working security work in law enforcement, man, I fell in love with it because the way that the rules and regulations and the structure work seem to fit well with my brain, the way that I work, So I fell in love with law enforcement, and I understood, working security work, I understood how to talk to people. And so, I was a security guard at King's Dominion, and I was leading security at Virginia Center Commons Mall when it first opened up. And, we were unarmed. And, of course, both of those places gave us a lot of exposure to a lot of different personalities. And we had problems. But I found that if you just talk to people the right way and treat people the right way, you can de-escalate a situation.
Yeah.
And so that kind of was where, I started law enforcement. I started in Caroline County. When I was old enough to become a deputy, I started working in the jail. Same kind of concept for me. Like, I know how to talk to people, so it's no problem. And then I was promoted to the road. I was always, I was excited about my job. I was always, you know, in the newspaper for making some arrest or doing something. And I got to a place where I wanted to do some more training. And coincidentally, my wife at the time had gotten a job in Stafford as well. So I transferred from Caroline to Stafford County. Meanwhile, I met Troy while I worked in Caroline County, and he was working for Spotsylvania.
Yeah.
And then I switched over to Stafford, which still neighbors Spotsylvania. So we kind of had this relationship through the years. I'd moved around and he stayed put. But, when I moved to Stafford, had some pretty major arrests early on in my career. I had some, especially when I was promoted to narcotics. And I think that I became self-driven. When you're promoted, and within your first week of being promoted, you get one of the largest seizures, to that date, it does something to a young man.
Sure.
And I became performance-driven because, most guys don't see that kind of arrest their whole career. I saw it my first week. And so, it was all downhill. So what do?
Yeah.
You try to work harder. You try to do more. But meanwhile, I'm neglecting my family life. I'm neglecting other things. There's problems in the background I'm not dealing with. And I get to a place where the pressure of it all, I think the exposure to the lifestyle, the lines got blurred for me. And I became a person that was, I had some problems, but I didn't know how to deal with them because I was a problem solver, not a problem haver.
We're going to take a quick break and pick up this story. Brian Freeman is here. Troy Skibo is here. Second Chances is what we're talking about this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Food waste.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Brian Freeman and Troy Skibo in this morning as we talk about second chances. So, Brian, you have led us to the point. You're in Stafford County now,
mm-hmm.
and have made some big arrests. And as you have talked about, you were feeling good.
Yeah, I was officer of the quarter for the end of '99, and then again in the beginning of 2000. I got these awards and all of this stuff. I got an award for an arrest from a robbery that took place a while back, and it was just a lot. It was a highlight kind of situation, but I can look at the young man that I was now and know that I wasn't processing where I was correctly. I knew that I enjoyed law enforcement. I enjoyed the camaraderie, the excitement of it, the fact that it's usually not the same thing every day. But my personal life was not where it needed to be. And I know that, all the problems I was having were just in the background doing push-ups, getting stronger and stronger. And when the right situation happened, they surfaced.
What a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Your problems were doing push-ups.
They were getting stronger and stronger, because if you don't deal with them, what happens. And so it's always, when I give my story, it's always I always tell it from where I was at that time. I can tell you how I feel now, but it's always a tough emotional thing for me, because I go back to that place. I look back. I don't live back. But sometimes when I look back, it resurfaces. And, when I made a decision to use drugs, it was not out of an addiction point of view. It was from a I don't want to live anymore point of view.
Hmm.
And when everything fell apart in the sheriff's office and I used drugs and they had to charge me. I didn't really know who I was from that point forward, because everything I wanted to do, like I explained earlier, was, law enforcement, and I liked that. I felt that was my calling. And, I'd done a lot of training, a lot of schooling, a lot of stuff on working undercover. So now my job was really my identity. It was what I did, and it was who I was. unfortunately. I know better now, but I can tell you that's where I was then. So, you know, when I made the decision to be honest and let them know what happened, you know, the law, there was a process. So I go to court. They give me not a lot of time at first. They suspended like 4 years, 6 months, and I had to do 6 months. And this is in 2002. So I go in, and it was very rough. It was very rough because, you know, the nature of who I was, they had to keep me in solitary confinement. And that was a big, big part. I know I did, you know, between these two charges, I've done a lot of time in solitary confinement because I was a police officer and they wanted to protect me. So, you know, I come home after the 4.5, 5 months, and, you know, I'm lost, but I'm still, you know, trying to act like I got it all together, but I'm so broken. You know, I don't even know who I am. You know, I start working. God always is giving me the ability to, you know, start businesses and to earn money. So I started, and the next thing you know, I'm making more money than I've ever made. And, you know, I've got a commercial cleaning company. I'm cleaning fitness clubs, and I got contracts with fitness clubs, and everything's going well. But there was such a hole in my heart, Ted, that I could not find anything to plug it. And I eventually got to the place where I just gave up again.
Yeah,
I gave up again. And in 2006, I was going to commit suicide again, but this time I wasn't going to back out. So I needed to make sure that I followed through this time. So as I'm going, I grab a water hose, I put it in the back of my Jeep, and I'm driving to the commuter lot, and I'm going to put the hose in the, you know, and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know, and but the thing of it is I drive by the store on the way, and I'm thinking, well, I definitely can't commit suicide without getting a cigarette first. So I need to stop in here and get me some cigarettes, you know? Even on TV, when they do the thing, they blindfold him and give the guy a cigarette.
Right.
It's a rule, right? So I stop in, you know, I walk right into the store. Now, I remember before I left my home, I drank a couple bottles of wine, and I was just totally out of it because I was going to check out this time. And I walk into the store, and the girl knows me. She speaks to me, I speak to her. And she looks at me and she's like, "Are you doing okay, honey?" And I'm like, "Well, no, I'm not." And she's like, "Well, is there anything I can do for you?" And I thought, yeah. And I told Troy yesterday, this was rock bottom for me. Somebody asked me yesterday, what was rock bottom? And rock bottom for me was a question. And the question was, could you please give me all the money in the register? Because I never would have thought I would have asked someone that question.
Yeah.
That was my rock bottom. But I never thought I'd be sitting across from Ted Schubel or next to Troy Skibo explaining or talking or giving a testimony about how I survived this, because there was no surviving this at that time for me. There was no surviving this. So the girl gave me, I think it was like $180. And remember, I told you I was so numb when I walked in that store. I had drank some wine, and I was coming off of drugs, and I remember walking in the store not even being able to feel the bottom of my feet. And when I walked, she put that money in my hand, and I turned around and walked out, I was completely sober. It was like God took all of the intoxication out of me. And I stood there and I said, "What did you just do? What did you just do?" And I knew right then, I said, "Well, you're definitely going to jail now. But before you go in there," because I had an experience already, I knew what I was about to go through, right? I wasn't scared of it, but I was dreading it. And I knew that I needed to do something else. So I went to South Carolina to get out of the area, and I got into a recovery program that was allowing me to go there and work. And that's when, so there was probably a week and a half, 2 week period of time where I was gone after mm-hmm. the robbery. And then that's when Troy, who was still working for Spotsylvania, ended up getting the case.
And I guess was it difficult to track him down?
You know, I got called out that night as the on-call detective, and I went to the store and did the typical detective stuff. You know, the crime scene was locked down, did a little bit of evidence recovery, and spoke with the victim, and took a look at the video. And it was when I looked at the videos when things changed.
You recognized?
Yeah, it definitely
Brian.
Did. Yeah. I recognized him, and I just was in disbelief. Went back to the office the next, you know, the following week, worked on the case, utilized some tools and tactics, tracked him down to Charleston, South Carolina, and went ahead and called him. I think I still had his phone number in my phone, and I called him up. And, you know, by that time, I had him surrounded by the U.S. Marshals were down there and had eyes on him. But we had a really good conversation over the phone. It wasn't, you know, just, hey, turn yourself in type stuff. It was a really deep conversation. And I told him, I said, look, they're outside, they're watching you, you know. And they went ahead and got him. And he went to the federal courthouse where I think I picked him up. I don't know how long it was after that, but I went and picked him up. And we brought him back to Virginia, but we had some even more deeper conversation on that ride back. Mm-hmm. And then he went through the court process.
Yeah.
And which was very unique, you know, having a local former cop have to go through the process like that. But I treated him just like any other, you know, arrestee that I've had to deal with in my career. And look where we are now.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you that part of my recovery, because one thing about processing what you've been through is that you get to a place where you look back. Like I said, you look back, but you don't live back. And there are things that happen when you look back that you see kind of built a bridge for you to be able to be where you are now, you know. And so when I look back at how I was treated, during that time
by Troy,
I can't say that it could have been done any better. I can say that words that I held on to all these years was words that came from Troy when he said, Brian, you know, if you can survive this and get your life back together, he said, man, you will help a lot of people. And at the time, I just wanted to tell him, go ahead and rub that on your chest, because it didn't mean anything to me, right? But through the years, it never, when I started getting healthy again, all those things, the judge, Judge Scott, he said, Mr. Freeman, the court has listened very well, and you're not a bad person. And I'm looking forward to the day when you get better, because you'll probably be working in the recovery organization for the rest of your life.
Wow.
And I wanted to tell him to take that and 25 cents to go get a cup of coffee as well, because I didn't feel it at the time. But I understood and I heard those things loud and clear when everything got better, you know. And those were the things that let me know. And I knew I could come back home at some point, because there were people here that really didn't know me and knew I wasn't a bad person. Yeah. I just made a wrong turn.
No, you have to think that would you be here today and be on the path you had if Troy hadn't been at the other end of that phone call, and if he hadn't treated you like that.
Yeah.
And that just shows Troy, your bearings as a law enforcement officer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every person you encounter, you know, whatever profession you're in, you've got to treat them like a human, with respect. And it can be twofold what's brought back to you. Tenfold, actually.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, things kind of bounce from there, and then we can tell you what happened 19 years later after that last walk into the jail, where last time I saw him for 19 years, with the exception of going to court. But
So what happened?
Well, I can go start with that. Yeah. 19 years. It was June of last year. I got involved with an organization called Failsafe right here in Fredericksburg with Juanita Shanks. Mm-hmm. They had a conference, and it was at Germana Community College. So I wanted to go to it, And I sat in the room. I think I was one of maybe two law enforcement officers in the area, and a lot of different variety of people that attended the class. And I sat down at my table and took a look at the agenda. And I wish there was a camera on my face when that happened, because I was looking at the agenda and I saw that one of the speakers was Brian Freeman. And so I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And so I had to find him before the class started. And we spoke out in the lobby. And I don't know, it wasn't rehearsed because you didn't know I was going to be there. Mm-mm. But when he spoke to the audience, he had mentioned me, and it was just that, I think that's where the rekindle happened.
Yeah. And so, yeah, because I hadn't seen this guy, you know, and I've been wanting to see him, and I was so proud of his career because he's done phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I told him the other day, I said, you know, the last time you saw me, I was up on stage sitting beside the judge, you know, being mm-hmm. told what was going to happen. I said, then the next time you see me 20 years later, I'm up on stage still testifying, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, in a different way.
In a different way, you know.
Yeah.
But
there's that void between the 19 years. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Brian, he relocated to New York, where he got involved with another recovery program. And you were there for like, what, 12 years?
Yeah.
So
I was the director.
That was a bulk of the 19. It's not like he just went off, you know. You know, God's good. He came back 19 years later, and it just involved with the that conference. We met a week later after the conference, had lunch, and we're like, it was at that point we looked at each other and we're like, we need to tell our story.
Yeah.
And
there's no way we supposed to be talking about this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. So we did, and we did a podcast. It went very, very well. Got a lot of feedback off of that, and then and then you can kind of go into the HEART program and how Sheriff Carl Leonard down in Chesterfield kind of helped the next phase.
Hold on to that. We're going to take a quick break and continue on this morning. You get goosebumps with a story like this because you just see so many things. I mean, you had to be open to some things and be willing to do some things, Brian. And boy, Troy, you could have just, when you recognized him, you could have come down on him and said, you know, you've screwed up again, and you know, we're coming to get you, but you didn't. And it just a lot of things and a lot of exciting stuff. We'll take a quick break and continue on this story with Troy Skibo and Brian Freeman this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station.
D-News.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Brian Freeman and Troy Skibo in this morning with just a pretty incredible story. So we pick up, where are you at now in this story, Brian?
So I've been blessed to be the founder and CEO of Connect Ministries. When I served in New York, I served for a program that had 350 beds and in different locations in New York. And it was a phenomenal opportunity. I learned a lot. And because it was a faith-based organization, we had a grassroots way of doing things. So we had micro businesses, thrift stores, furniture stores, landscaping, and that's how we kept the ministry floating. There was a $3.5 million operating budget, so we had to have substantial micro enterprises in order to make it work.
Sure.
Coming back to Virginia, I only wanted to come back if I could continue to do what I was doing in New York. I'd lost my grandma, my dad had some medical issues, and you know, my family's getting older, you know, so I felt like I wanted to be back, and for the longest time, I didn't come back home because I felt like I wasn't comfortable home. I felt like it was like the Bible says, Egypt, you know, coming back to Egypt. But then I realized that Egypt was a mindset and not a place. So I had changed, so it didn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So I came home, I started Connect Ministries. I opened up a furniture store and thrift store, and then I opened up a second one. Within 90 days, and I started giving guys jobs, and I noticed that there were a lot of guys that needed work, and they were living at the campgrounds and living under tents. You know, I'm giving guys sofas to take and put under a tent to live at the campground. And I just, my prayer was, God, please give us a home.
A home, sure.
And he did. He gave us a beautiful facility. It's 10,000 square feet on 5.5 acres in Spotsylvania County. You know, we've been open now for officially for a year. We've had 11 men serve through the program in our year of being open. It's rural, so we do have some challenges. Our challenges are transportation and things like that to the jobs. You know, we're kind of in the middle of Fredericksburg and Richmond. But, you know, a lot of guys need getting a second chance, don't have license and things like that. So we're just trying to still, you know, handle that. But, yeah, so Connect Recovery is up and going. We are a state-certified program. We are a peer recovery program. We focus on stabilization. We are not clinical. I believe that this model works because people that are in addiction are moving targets. And, you know, they go here, they fall, they get better. They go here, they fall, they get better. And at the end of the day, really, we need to learn how to stabilize them better. And I know what I needed when I came home. I needed some stability. So I feel like if I can do that, then the people that are the counselors and the clinical people have a person, they have an audience that's a captive, if you will, a person that is stable, a person that if you give them some information, they're going back to an environment where they can meditate and understand what they just are learning and not back to a situation that's full of chaos. And so that is the purpose of Connect, is to, you know, moving targets. You know, it's hard to hit a moving target, and we hit them every now and then, and we have this metrics of, hey, look at what we did. But for every moving target, there's three behind them that we missed. And I feel like we just need to do a better job of that and destabilizing guys. So that's Connect Recovery.
As you talk about that, Brian, I just keep thinking of what you said, you know, what Judge Scott said to you. And yeah. what Troy, what you said to him. You saw something in him.
Oh, I did. But, I mean, that was a long time ago. I mean, that was 19 years ago. I thought he forgot about it. But he fooled us. He definitely did. So, you know, that took us to what happened this past week. Brian and I got an invitation from a friend of mine, I think that was the first time. Well, not this week, but you've spoke to him a few different times. Mm-hmm. But Sheriff Carl Leonard down in Chesterfield County, he runs the jail down there, and he has a nationally known, very well-driven program called the HEART program.
Yeah.
And I think it's called Helping Addicts Recover Progressively. Correct. Is what it stands for.
Yeah.
And so, Brian, I'll let you kind of go into how we were able to.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. I asked if we could, you know, tell our story. And, of course, Sheriff was all about that. One of the things he does at that jail is he has the arresting officers come to the graduations of the people that graduate the program. So this is kind of in his lane.
Wow. You know? Oh, this is, wow. Yeah. What a perfect story.
Yeah. So when we talked about it, he said, absolutely. And we went out there and, you know, we walk in and, you know, they stand and they're clapping. It's, you know, 100 people clapping at you. And we walked in to tell a story and share a story. But as soon as you walk in that room, you feel a story. It comes right back at you. Like, you have to, I felt like there was a time I had to balance the situation in my heart, because I'm like, man, there's a lot of power in this room. Because, you know, when you walk in across the wall, there's pictures, 102 pictures all around the building. And those are people who had left the program and overdosed and died.
Wow.
That's what you see when you walk in, right? And as we're there in the very beginning, everybody's getting situated. There's this young lady on the top, and she's got her hands in her face, and she's crying. She's bawling crying. And I'm. The sheriff stops and he says, young lady, are you okay? And she stands up and she was like, I know him. I know Connect. She said, do you remember me? You let me and my boyfriend do the repair work on your stairs at your recovery home. I'm like, I do remember you. And I wonder where they went, because her little girl and my daughter play together, right? she says, my boyfriend died. He overdosed and died. And I've been in jail since.
Huh.
And it was so powerful because it just goes to show that this is real. It was real life because I saw that young man and I knew there's a difference between a shell of a man and a man in a shell. And the shell of a man that he was, I knew he was a shell because he was taking her with him. He didn't have the conscience inside of him to keep his addiction from bringing her down as well. He was a shell of a man. Some guys are just men in shells and they just don't know how to break out of it. And there's still something good in there and they still have a conscience. But when you get to that place in your addiction, like he was, that was his last run. And I tried to help him and I couldn't. But it was a powerful testimony to be able to share with that room at how real it really is.
It definitely was. And we were able to hear some testaments from some inmates. And I thought it was great that they were opening up to us, you know, two complete strangers. But that might be part of the healing process.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we heard some stories from different inmates who committed armed robberies, ran from the police, and I kind of wanted to know what their story was to help bridge the gap that we have between law enforcement and people who are going through the process. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot of things from that. And I mean, a lot of it was like, you know, you guys want to help us, you offer to help us right when you arrest us, but we're not in the right mind at that moment, you know.
Interesting.
We're,
yeah,
you know, we're either intoxicated on something or adrenaline or emotional, and so, you know, come back after a few days. But one thing that they do offer down in Chesterfield that I think is a great program, and I would love to see it here in our region, is a peer-to-peer. Mm-hmm. You have a graduate from the program who was hired by the sheriff, full-time female named Joy, and mm-hmm. she rides with the officers in Chesterfield. Mm-hmm. And she acts as that peer-to-peer, and it is amazing what they are doing down there. And so I told you earlier that coincidence is often God's signature. And so I was sitting there. I know people have seen in the media how Jelly Roll paid a visit to that jail and stood in the same room that we did
mm-hmm.
and spoke to the same group of people that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, yeah, Jelly Roll and myself know someone, or I don't know him, you know, personally, but we have had a lot of interactions. And it's a guy by the name of Brandon Lake. And they were all amazed about, you know, Brandon. I said, well, Brandon has a little bit of connection to Spotsylvania County that a lot of people don't know. He was the worship leader at Life Point Church back in the day.
Okay.
And so,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, again, coincidence. That here we are, I think we were 20 years almost to the day that we were talking to this group of inmates when Brian committed that robbery. And so it's just amazing just how things work itself out. And so
you want to hear something else funny? I recently found out that South Carolina had never taken the fugitive warrant out of the system. Remember, he came and got me in
South Carolina.
So for 20 years, there's been a fugitive warrant. And I showed Troy. I said, Troy, I couldn't believe it. I said, and I only figured it out because I've gone through so many background checks to go into the prisons and things, and it came up. And I'm like, well, I don't know what this could be. I haven't had any law enforcement interaction in over 20 years. And to go to prove it, I was wanted if I had. And so, of course, it was a little quick thing. They took it out. But isn't that something? How? And
yeah, it was just, you know, every time.
20 years.
If you go to a state and you're wanted, then if you're wanted from Virginia and you're picked up in South Carolina, then that state local official will get a fugitive warrant on you. And it's also called a governor's warrant. And so he either has to waive his extradition back to Virginia or he fights it. And so they just never took it out of the system. And so, but it's just, you know, our story is just has these ups and downs, and it's just amazing how, how things have unfolded. I was telling Brian, when I left the jail this week, I walked out of the jail. We were walked out by a sergeant. I think it was a sergeant. Mm-hmm. Sergeant Garcia. Great guy with Chesterfield. We were sitting there talking, and I told Brian, I said, man, I feel high. I feel high. And I'm not talking drug high, you know?
Right. Yeah. How could you not after what happened?
So powerful.
Yeah, it was amazing what just happened.
And you and I, either the day of this or maybe the day before, had set up, Brian, that you were going to come in. And then after you two got together, you both independently said something to me and said, yeah, hey, because we talked about doing this show. So, the timing this week. Because all of a sudden, one day, I'm sitting the other morning and I thought, I got to get a hold of Brian and see, mm-hmm, you know if he might be free on Thursday morning.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. The timing couldn't have been better. It's like Troy said, that was definitely a signature.
There's a lot of different programs in the greater Fredericksburg area that will attend to this. And, you know, some have different approaches. You know, Brian's approach is, like you said, grassroots approach. But there's some great organizations. You just got to reach out and find the one that fits you.
Yeah.
And I've been very fortunate in my career to where I have had some interaction with people that I've arrested in the past. Brian is one of three that just come to mind that I still keep in contact with. The other two is a female that was writing script frauds with pain pills. And I put her in the penitentiary. She spent 17 years in the penitentiary. Mm. And she had reached out to me when she got out. She reached out to me to thank me, which you hardly get in our career. And so we just connected. We're able to continue that relationship to where she had relocated out of the area, down in Richmond. She lost a daughter to an overdose. And now she serves a recovery program down in the Richmond area. So, and then another gentleman who was hooked on heroin who reached out to me simply because he could not get into a rehab facility, whether it was insurance, couldn't afford it, you know, they paid no attention to him or whatever it may be. And I was able to get him into, with the help of someone else, I was able to get him into a local rehab. And again, he has strived. That's good. And it's great to see these success stories.
Yeah.
And because you don't see them too often.
Well, in your case, Brian, to have the Lord put a Troy Skibo, you know, that, you know, that he saw that footage and knew that I know who that is.
Yeah, it's been full circle. Back in April, I received an award from Senator Tim Kaine through the Failsafe organization, and at that gala, there were some law enforcement people there that I had previously worked with, namely the sheriff of Stafford, and then there was sheriff of Fredericksburg was there, and a couple of other local officials, the Rappahannock Regional Director.
Yeah.
And I was able to apologize publicly to those guys, because we had relationships that were 20 years old that came to stop abruptly because of my decision, and there was really never any closure. So as much as the award was great, it was even greater to be able to look at them and go, I am sorry, brother. I am sorry that my storm created consequences for you.
Yeah,
and I just wanted them to know that please continue to believe that people can get better, because I'm getting better every day. And it was a great moment, and God has been releasing something in my spirit because of these type of moments with Troy and with DP and with Steve and those other guys, because I needed that. I needed that.
Yeah, just to know? be able to say yeah, you're sorry. And Troy, for you, we talked at the start about how difficult it is when law enforcement has to, you know, arrest one of your own. And in some sense, you rightfully would be angry that this you know reflects on all of us, but you didn't have that in your heart, and you were thinking about how can we help Brian the person.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like I said before, you never know what someone's going through at that time of their life. It doesn't matter if you're law enforcement, if you're, you know, a career criminal, or, you know, something that just happened by chance. But, you know, in Brian's case, you know, we in law enforcement need to recognize the self-care of even the law enforcement officers and the civilian personnel, you know, who day in, day out put a lot out there. And so there's a lot of great programs that are either in place or being created that will help assist that. And so I often wonder if, you know, back then, if there was programs to help recognize what Brian was going through,
yeah,
could things have been prevented?
Yeah.
And so,
you know, I actually had a few folks reach out to me and say exactly that too. You know, some folks I used to work with was like, you know, I often wonder how things would have turned out if we had a better way to help you.
Yeah.
And, you know, for that statement to even be made,
right,
it blessed my heart.
We take a quick break, a real quick break, and we're going to wrap this up this morning. Unfortunately, we could go on for hours, but we'll do more shows in the future on this. Brian Freeman, Troy Skibo here this morning. We'll wrap it up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Summer's calling, and it's time to answer from your brand new Yamaha boat from Fredericksburg Motorsports. At Fredericksburg Motorsports, the water's closer than you think. Whether you're chasing adrenaline or laid-back days in the sun, there's a Yamaha built just for you. Fredericksburg Motorsports has a team of boating experts ready to guide you to the perfect fit so you can hit the water with confidence. Your Yamaha boat is waiting at Fredericksburg Motorsports. Come get the one from the one for fun.
Fredericksburg Motorsports.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
We could go on for another couple of hours, and it would never drag. Brian Freeman, Troy Skibo here this morning as we talk about friendship and second chances and in making mistakes and redemption. Before we get out of here, you mentioned, Brian, a little bit about Connect Ministries, and we're going to do much more of that with that, you and I. But how can people find out more? How can people get involved with Connect Ministries and what you're doing in Spotsylvania?
Sure. So we have a thrift and furniture store that's in Caroline County, and just over the Caroline County line in Spotsylvania is our recovery home. They're literally 5 minutes from each other, but okay, right on the county line. Anyone that wants to get involved, it is exclusively for people who have a background of recovery. You know, whether you got better 10 years ago and fell off, or you fell off, you know, sometime in the recent past, we still want to help. Connect Ministries, Connect is spelled with a K. The K is for kingdom. So it's KONNECT ministries.com. And you can go and you can see our website. You can see the home and see the different things we do. It's a structured environment, but you get to go to work. There's a curfew. Of course, we do accountable living. And I know you know all about that process. So we have all those things in place. But it's a beautiful place to live, something that guys can feel good about as they get their second chance. We work with people from the Department of Correction, people on parole, people coming out of programs, or somebody who just needs help getting it together.
ConnectMinistries.com. Again, as Connect is with a K.
Correct.
ConnectMinistries.com. Troy Skibo, for you, and in some ways we tell the story, you got to feel at times like, you know, just kind of the proud father. Seeing all this, I mean, and again, these are the things you get into law enforcement for a lot of reasons, but to see something like this, that has to really change you and even make you a better
law enforcement professional. Absolutely does. You know, the gray hair does come with the proud father. But
yeah, you do have a little bit more than the last time I saw you.
I don't color it anymore. So
I wonder how many of those are mine.
I don't know.
Which one is mine?
But Ted, you're right. You know, I just want to stress on in our career with law enforcement, you know, it's important for us to recognize you know, people who are struggling. Second chance is something that can play a positive impact on someone. You know, I'd be remiss not to say that with the suicide prevention hotline, you know, anybody that's struggling, there is 988 that they can reach out to. And then for all my law enforcement and public safety first responders, get involved with a wellness program within your agency or a wellness program within your jurisdiction, and help your brother and sisters out in case you're struggling. Doesn't matter what the struggle is, if it's you know, financial, drugs, you know, marital issue, whatever it may be, get involved.
Thank you both, and we're going to do much more. That just have every once in a while have the two of you come in, and it's a story that never gets old. And like you say, you had the situation in Chesterfield this week of getting to share. You're going to continue to have those kinds of things.
Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Brian. It's finally good to get you in studio. You and I have talked about doing this, and the three of us have talked about doing this show for quite some time. ConnectMinistries.com. Connect with a K if you want to find out more about the work of Brian Freeman. And Troy Skiba, always good to see you around town. We'll continue to see you.
Thanks,
thank
Jeff.
You.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian and Troy. That's it. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.